All right. Welcome to take two of this episode. I was just wrapping up, literally, and the audio just cut off, and I went to look at it, and it said it's not recoverable. So just, I'm SOL. So I'm going to start over because that was good, and I can't promise that. Because I'm redoing it, it's going to be even better this time. So you're going to get a better episode, you know, maybe. I doubt it, but and I also had like three or four different sounds going on and guess the sounds on the podcast today. But I guess those are lost. Sorry. Now it's dead quiet in here. Dishwasher stopped. The dogs stopped barking. The helicopters I'm flying over. So all the fun's gone. Sorry. It's just quiet. Anyway, welcome to this episode of Carpooling with Adam. And this is the fourth in the series talking about the book Competing Against Luck by Clayton M. Christensen. Chapter four today, beginning of part two in the book. So here we go. Take two. Section two is called The Hard Work and Payoff of Applying Jobs Theory. Chapter four is called Job Hunting. Where are all these jobs to be done, right? How do we find them? Where are they? Sounds like they're just sitting there waiting for the harvest. Well, no. Much like the little red hen, you don't just get to show up at the end and eat the bread. That's not how it works, unfortunately. And I don't have a magic wand or a tool or service to sell you that will do it all for you. So I apologize. So how do you find them? Well, there are tools and things out there to help, but the tool itself doesn't matter so much. But what you're looking for and how you piece the observations together from that looking, that matters most, right? Not the tool you use or the strategy to get there. Just by introduction, he talks about if you spot barriers or frustrating experiences, you found the first clues. First clues. Didn't say, there you go. Solution found. Here it is, silver platter. Run to production and away you go. Nope. You found the first clues. Clues mean, hey, we should look here. We should examine this more. We should investigate further, right? Just getting started, but those are some clues of those are some good places to start. So then he elaborates in the chapter on ways to uncover jobs, seeing them in your own life, finding opportunity in non-consumption, identifying workarounds, maybe looking at things you don't want to do, that the market doesn't want to do, things your competitors don't want to tackle. Good places to look. And spotting unusual uses of products. The one I found, this not that this has just an example of finding unusual uses. This I'm you know this isn't a great business idea. I don't know how many business ideas have come out of this or product is, but at least as far as spotting unusual uses. Think of all the different things you've seen, whether on YouTube or in your life or whatever, different uses of an electric drill, right? I've seen a lot more uses for them than just drilling holes and driving screws, right? All kinds of different things out there and uses for an electric drill that people come up with. Do all of them turn into profitable business? No. But just an example of using something outside the box for an outside of the box purpose. All right. So then I'll jump back to, and this time we have enough time, I think, to cover both the chapter takeaways and the questions for leaders. So again, the value proposition of jobs theory. It provides a clear guide for successful innovation. Why? because it enables a full comprehensive insight into all the information you need to create solutions that perfectly nail the job. I like that full comprehensive insight phrase, right? The more insight and more comprehensive and full it is that you have, the much better you're going to meet the need. The next key takeaway from this chapter is there are a lot of different ways to develop a deep understanding of the job. A lot of traditional market research techniques. He doesn't go over those because they're out there. They're common. So many people use them over and over. And the strategy and the techniques don't matter as much. What matters most is the questions you ask in applying those strategies and techniques and how you piece the resulting information together. That's the key. Not which strategy or which technique you use. I'm sure you or Mark do differently because they're selling those tools and techniques and strategies. And he talks about looking in your own life, right? It's things you have a direct connection to. Your own lives, your own experiences when you're out there in the world interacting, and lots of insight and light bulb moments to be had there. And thinking about them and maybe observing and looking at them differently than you have before and in not such a routine way could yield some very good insights there. Most companies spend the bulk of their time and their market research efforts trying to understand their current customers. How well do you understand those who aren't your customers, those who don't want to be your customers, those who aren't willing to be your customers? Well, ask why. Lots of good insights there can be found. If they're not buying yours or anyone else's for that matter, something worth looking into. There's a flag, there's a clue. If you see people doing a workaround or a compensating behavior, pay attention. Again, another clue is that you stumbled on high potential innovation opportunity. The job is so important and they are so frustrated that there's not something out there to help them. They're making up their own. They're coming up with their own solution, right? It's obviously a pain point that needs to be overcome for them to make progress. Why is there no other offering out there that meets their needs, that they're willing to pay for? And then look closely at how they use your products. What are they doing with them? And then look for, are they using them in a weird or unexpected way? Just speaking from my perspective in the software world, often when engineers and development teams go to visit customers and observe how their products are being used, it's a wealth of insights. And every time they come back with changes or improvements that need to be made, or maybe new offerings, or maybe we need to go in a different direction, just yields a wealth of information that they wouldn't get otherwise, right? Two parts to that. Why aren't they getting that information? That's, in my opinion, the first question to ask. Why do you have to take an engineer out to get that insight when you have several layers and groups of people in between who it's their role to provide that information? If that's not happening, look there. Start examining that as one possible avenue. But then the other, sometimes you just need someone who's closest to the products and its production to pick up on the insights. Maybe just no one else will. If that's the case, how do you enable more of those interactions? I don't know. The two go hand in hand. Why is your organization not doing that? All those layers before that person, before you get an engineer, right? Because an engineer, especially in the software world, just wants to build stuff. They just want to build software. They want to build it well. They want it to be useful. And because they're so closely tied to it, often they're going to spot things. But why aren't the other several layers of highly compensated individuals finding that insight? Some real important and probably some tough questions to ask that most companies don't want to ask because it's touchy. You're poking in stuff that might make people upset, but the insight to be gained there is worth the poking around, in my opinion. Okay. And then most companies, last of the key takeaways from this chapter, focus disproportionately on the functional dimensions of their jobs. I think he mentioned this briefly in one of the previous two chapters. And that's where most people stop. They just look at the functional stuff and move on. He says you also need to consider the emotional and social dimensions. Well, now that I say that, I think you can see why most people stop at the first one, right? It's easy to look at the functional. It's easy to look at the mechanical. Ooh, now I got to get into the people part of it. The emotional and social part. Ooh, those are messy. They can be ugly. And they're not as easy because they're so nuanced and multidimensional, right? Humans are complex. And you start looking into those areas, it's maybe not as intuitive as the mechanical things are, right? Everybody knows that a wheel needs to roll and do it smoothly, right? But now you start looking at the emotional and social things. Not everybody knows that. All us humans haven't nailed being a human, certainly in ourselves and much less in other people and understanding them perfectly. It's tricky. It's harder waters to navigate, but man, what a huge wealth of insight and information to be gathered there if you're willing to do that work, which most people aren't. So if you're one of the few or the one that's willing to do that, it gives you a big advantage. And makes you be the one who's more likely to nail the customer's job and have the solution or offering for them. So why not? It's definitely worth it if that's what it means, right? All right. So questions for leaders. What are the important unsatisfied jobs in your own life and in the lives closest to you, right? You've got a direct connection. It's a good place to start because you're familiar with it. You understand your own family and the dynamics there and in your extended family and in your neighbors and friends and community. All right. These things, these areas, these dimensions, you have a direct connection to. And so you can more readily gain some insight and understanding in those areas. And again, looking at all dimensions, functional, emotional, and social, and of the progress you're trying to make. Look at all those dimensions and the progress you're trying to make. What opportunities do you see? What innovation possibilities are there? And then if you're a consumer of your own company's products, right? If you're a user, you're eating the dog food. Is it meeting your needs? Why not? It's because you're such a unique individual in such unique circumstances that you're the one exception case. No, not likely, right? That notion is a bit laughable. So if it's a problem to you and if there's barriers to you, chances are other people are having those problems too and are in the same circumstances and the same dynamics, maybe trying to make the same progress you are but aren't able to. So where's your product falling short for you? Look there and then go outside that, right? And then look at who's not buying your products, who's not consuming them. Why? Why do you have customers who are, and why are there people in this seemingly same market who are not? right? Ask those questions, do investigations there. Lots of good insights to be found. And what's getting in the way of them using your products to solve their jobs, right? What are the obstacles? Are you creating the obstacles? Are there dynamics in the market that are creating that? You got to ask those questions. Take a real careful look at your products and the difficulty in using them and what the challenges and pain points are. And really try and get a good comprehensive understanding of that. And then he talks about going outside that. And now that you've taken a good look close to home, go outside that. Get out in the field. See how customers are using your products. In what circumstances do they use them? And again, like you considered with in your immediate circle, also consider functional, emotional, and social dimensions of the progress they're trying to make. Now that you're a little more removed and not so directly connected, re-examine those dimensions. How are they different? How are they the same? Are you seeing them something being done unexpectedly? Are they using your products and are they doing something different in those dimensions than what you observed before? And what does that tell you? Ask those questions. What does it reveal about the nature of their jobs? What insights can you gain or learn from that? Right? So again, you got to be willing to put in this time and this effort. It's hard, but that's why not everybody does it. And the people who do have the advantage. Right? And then let's just talk for a little bit about why they don't. Why don't people put in that effort, right? Just because there's a race going on doesn't mean you have to join it, right? If you happen to be somewhere and, oh, there's a half marathon or a marathon or even a 5K happening and you haven't registered for the race, but you see the race going, do you got to jump in? You hop the barrier and join the race? No, right? Just because there's a race happening doesn't mean you have to be in it. Why do people do that, right? Why do companies do that? Well, because it's the trend. There's a lot of buzz around it, right? They haven't done enough of this digging in that we've just been talking about. And so they're hoping that just jumping in the race will compensate for that. It won't. Maybe they're worried that their competitors are going to figure it out before them. Usually not. Usually not. Because why? Because the competitors, most of them are not going to put in the effort. They're not going to do the work to gain that full comprehensive insight and understanding. And so if you do, while everyone else is running the rat race, you can show up at the end with something, an offering. You haven't just won the race. You weren't just first to market, but geez, you've got something that's actually helping customers make the progress they need to make. And then you're in a much better position to serve those customers and serve that market for the long, short and long term. And then you win, right? Just because you choose not to run a particular race doesn't mean you can't win any race. Right? There are some people who think there's always only one race to win. And I see this from people I've observed and companies I've observed in places like New York City, right? It's a major hub, a lot of commerce happening. And so many people are trying to win the exact same race, which is funny because there's so many opportunities there and so many different races to be ran and to win. But everyone goes all in on a singular one, particular one, the hop one, the popular one. And that just creates more losers than it does winners. You don't have to do it that way. But most people just want to do the easy route. just look at the functional aspect and dimensions, come up with a bunch of new features, a new quick, easy solutions and products, and away they are running, only to find that the race just gets longer and longer and they're doing worse and worse at it. Seen it happen over and over and over. So this insecurity that your competitors are going to get there first, someone else is going to beat it, make it before you, it's in your head. It's most of the time it's made up. And if not, if really you're getting looking to jump in that late in the game, probably shouldn't. You're setting yourself up to fail and to lose. Which, cool. Failure and losing are great if you can learn and then go better and move forward with that. But if not, if all you do is just chalk it up as a loss and nothing gained from it, why do that? Why run that race? Why run a losing race? Wouldn't you rather run a race you have a shot at? Which are you going to gain more from? Sorry, I'm getting too deep and too introspective. The last version that I did of this wasn't so psychological. So, sorry you didn't get that version. All right, be willing to learn. Be willing to put in the effort. And it will have big payoffs for you, make you more competitive, increase your opportunity to be successful and profitable, which in the end is what you want. And that's where you can do the most and have the most impact, whether you, that's on you or your family, friends or customers, or community, or the world, or wherever you're trying to have influence. Wish you the best. Hopefully this has given you some good things to think about, and hopefully you've gained some new insights, or gained insights on how to gain insights. And it will pay off and position you better to succeed. All right, good luck. Thanks for spending this time with me. Hope you have a good day or a good evening, and we'll talk to you again soon.